Cut the Clutter today takes you to Ladakh. Ladakh's been in our headlines for quite some time. There's been a protest, one set of protest led by Sonam Wangchuk, who's not a political person, not from a political party. But there are also political protests because there are questions about the status of Ladakh. There are also demands that range from education to ecology, to taxation, to autonomy, to the constitutional status of the Union Territory as it is right now. The post-August 5, 2019 issues are there, and many of those are leading to protests and demands right now. And there are also demands from many of you that we talk about Ladakh. And in fact, some of you have gone to the extent of saying that we don't seem to be focusing on Ladakh, or we seem to be ignoring Ladakh. We are not doing that at all. The important thing, however, was to get something, information, news from the ground, so that we are not just looking at newspaper articles or talking to a few people on the phone and giving you news on a remote basis. That's why today we have in Ladakh Ananya Bhardwaj, who's one of my senior colleagues. Also with her is Manisha Mondal, our camera person who's there on the camera. And while I give you a little bit of a brief and a little bit of background, please bear with me. Then we'll have Ananya on the screen with us, and she will tell you where she's sitting. She's at a protest site. She will tell you what the site is. And frankly, once you look at the skies and you can feel the breeze, you can see and feel the breeze, you will know what it feels like to be in Ladakh right now. So first of all, Ladakh. What is Ladakh? Ladakh is a very large territory. And I'm talking of the area that's currently in Indian control, because parts of Ladakh in what is called as POK, they are in those regions as well. But currently the territory that's with India, that's in Indian control right now, is 59,146 square kilometers. Still a lot of territory, very large territory. The important thing is the population density. What is the population there and what is the population density? So the population density of Ladakh, it's one of the most sparsely populated regions in the subcontinent. In fact, in the world, it is only 4.6 people per square kilometers. It's really small, really small. Then the population itself, 2,74,289 as per the 2011 census, so maybe a bit more, like you might say 3 lakhs now, or a little bit more than 3 lakhs right now. This is then split between the two regions of Ladakh, or you can say the two divisions of Ladakh. One is Leh, or the Ladakh division, and the other is the Kargil division. As things stand, population in the Kargil division is, if anything, a little bit more than the population in the Ladakh division. Over time, population in Kargil has gone up. Again, there is a demographic difference. In Leh division, 66.67% people are Buddhists. In the Kargil division, almost 77% are Muslim. In the past, the politics of the two districts used to be different, and it was run generally on the Buddhist basis and the Muslim basis. Most of the Muslims of Kargil region are Shia Muslims. Increasingly, however, we have found that lately there's been some common cause, particularly on issues of autonomy, etc. So this is a complex situation. It's also not an easy terrain to be in. If you look at Ladakh, the lowest altitude in all of Ladakh, it's a mountainous zone. The lowest altitude in Ladakh is 2,550 meters. That is 8,370 feet. That's much higher than Mussoorie, Shimla, Srinagar, any of the hill station, you know, at least a couple of thousand or 2,500 feet higher than that. That is the lowest in all of Ladakh. The highest, however, is 7,742 meters. That is 25,400 feet. So that is almost like a top Himalayan peak level altitude. So it's not an easy terrain. It has some rivers. It has the Indus coming through it and tributaries of Indus. But these don't have large areas that they irrigate, because most of the terrain is quite rocky and dry. And one of the perennial problems of the region is shortage of water. And a lot of the politics is also built around this shortage of water. Now, in the middle of all this, currently, there is a movement being led by Sonam Wangchuck. Sonam Wangchuck is now 58 years old. He's an engineer. He got his degree in mechanical engineering on what is National Institute of Technology, now in Srinagar, used to be the Regional Engineering College. Before that, he came to a Kendriya Vidyalaya in Delhi. His is a storied life. It's widely believed that in Three Idiots, the character Amir Khan had played, Funchuk Wangdu, was based on Sonam Wangchuck's life. I believe he denies that. Nevertheless, he's the man leading this agitation or this movement now, which has brought Ladakh into national headlines. Now, what that agitation is, what exactly is happening on the ground, how does the picture look? What better way for us to do it than to take you straight there to Ladakh and hear it all from Ananya Bhardwaj. So, Ananya, welcome to Cut the Clutter. I'm making you work really hard. I know that this is Ladakh. It's hot outside because of the sun and breezy. It's also one of the zones with among the highest UV figures in the world. So I hope you protected yourself properly with sunscreen, creams, etc. Don't get a sunburn. So tell us what's going on and where exactly are you sitting? So start by describing where exactly are you sitting.
So we are at the polo ground where essentially the protest led by Mr. Sonam Wangchuck started from. And this is the place where almost 20 to 25,000 people were there till about when the protest, the hunger strike, the 3 week long hunger strike was happening. In fact, a lot of these people were camping at this side. You could see just behind me that there are several people still sitting here. And if you could, if I can pan the camera and show you that, you know, there are a lot of camps still that are there because people not just sit here, they sleep here at night. They keep coming and going. It is not a protest where you'll see a lot of loud sloganeering or people cheering, but it's a very quiet affair. Mr. Sonam Wangchuck comes and sits in the front. There are a lot of posters with their demands listed out in those posters that are hanging around here. And you can see people from old people to middle age to youngsters who have made this as a part of their routine, that they come visit the polo ground in the morning, sit here for a couple of hours, then go back and do their chores, and then they come back again. So like we spoke to a lot of women who are older women who are here, they keep praying while they are here sitting on the protest. So these are all people of Ladakh who are following, who really follow Mr. Sonam Wangchuck. And, you know, he has become a really popular figure in Ladakh, in Leh. In fact, if you speak to people on the ground, they tell you, you know, he's the one who's actually putting across their demands to the central government, and he's the one who's given them a voice.
So you met him today. What is he telling you? What did he tell you? We'll run that interview in detail later. We might run a couple of lines from that interview as we talk. But tell us, what is he saying now?
So essentially, he reiterated the demands that he has been talking about and what this protest is all about. So he said a couple of very significant things. One is that the people of Ladakh are feeling betrayed by the government of India. The reason being that they have had this long-standing demand of Ladakh being created a union territory, which happened in 2019. But that demand wasn't, that demand was something which was not fulfilled in total. As in, they are saying that the UT status was granted, but the legislative assembly was not given, which is something that they wanted always. A UT without a legislative assembly is something which is not in line with the principles of democracy, and this is what they demand. So this is one major demand that he spoke about as to why it is essential for a democracy to have elections to elect their representatives, and why is it that while it can be given to Kashmir or other states, it can't be given to Ladakh. So that is one demand that he spoke about in great detail. Another one is the constitutional safeguard, the sixth schedule, which Ladakh has been demanding. The primary reason being that 97% of the population in Ladakh is tribal population. And although there are two councils that are here in Ladakh, like what you said in the beginning, the hill councils, one in Kargil and one in Leh, There also, there are about 30 councillors in each of these bodies, and they are elected representatives because they also, it's a political election that happens every 5 years. So it is also scheduled next year.
Who's leading in these councils right now?
So in Leh, the council is being led by the BJP. And in Kargil, it is a coalition between the NC and Congress. So this election also is in fact scheduled next year. It happened in 2020 last. So, but their concern being that these autonomous, this hill council is there, but they require a protection under sixth schedule because it will give them the power to legislate. Now, the difference between these councils and what they will have in case they get sixth schedule is that right now, these hill district, these hill councils, although they have certain powers, including power of allotment of land, healthcare, forest, education, which are listed out in their act, which was enacted in 1997. But they only have powers to basically make bylaws and rules and regulations, not make laws. So this is their demand that, you know, we need sixth schedule for the protection of our tribal population. And why is it that the government cannot give it to us while it can give it to other states, including Assam, Meghalaya, Tripura, where also this was given precisely to safeguard tribal population and their ethnicity. So these are the two major demands that Sonam Wangchuk spoke about. And the third one, the major one being, of course, because he's an environmentalist and he has been working in Ladakh for years for sustainable development. He spoke about how there's a need to strike a balance between ecology and development and how these power projects, these hydropower projects, solar projects, thermal projects, etc., that will be coming up in Ladakh are actually going to spoil the ecology, and how it will become a burden on the UT as their resources will be exploited. So he spoke in great detail about these major three things.
So three major demands, as I can see them: one, either give us statehood, or if it's a union territory status, still give it an assembly, like say any other union territory can have an assembly, Delhi, for example, a kind of assembly with limited powers, or Pondicherry. So maybe with an LG, but a UT with an LG, but an assembly. That's the first demand. Second is sixth schedule. Sixth schedule under our constitution gives a measure of self-governance and autonomy to tribal regions, where tribals can elect their own councils and take their own decisions. And that does not apply to all of Assam, Tripura. That applies to some districts of Assam. This was part of the Bodo settlement, and some districts in Tripura as well, the tribal districts. Although the tribal population in Tripura is about 25-27%. In this case, because tribal population is 97%, so the demand is that all of the union territory should be under the sixth schedule. So even when it gets a state assembly, it should still continue to be under sixth schedule. Anina, am I right?
Yes, absolutely.
So what is it that's irritating the people of Ladakh now? Because there is union territory, there will be parliament election now. They have an MP, elected MP, who is apparently very popular. He got elected with a very wide margin the last time. So what is it that's bothering them right now? Why aren't they happier after they became a union territory and they are no longer? Earlier, the complaint I used to hear was that we are under the thumb of Srinagar, that the bosses in Srinagar controls our area. We have no agency. What is it that they are upset about now in the post-August 5, 2019 situation?
In fact, now they have quite vocally started saying that they were better off when they were part of Jammu and Kashmir. And whatever, like I said in the beginning, that they feel betrayed by the government of India to have not fulfilled their demand in total, as in give them a UT along with an assembly. So this is what has actually irritated the people of Ladakh, that we were not taken seriously by the government of India. And post their demand of the Legislative Assembly, two groups basically were having dialogue with the Ministry of Home Affairs on how to resolve this issue. And even those talks have hit a deadlock because the government is extremely clear about not granting either statehood or sixth schedule to Ladakh. Another thing which is really irritating the people here is that they're now, so earlier, I'll just give you a scenario when Ladakh was part of Jammu and Kashmir. So the secretariat basically used to be either in Jammu or in Srinagar. So all the officials, the bureaucrats used to sit not in Ladakh, but in J&K. And the Hill District Councils that we spoke about before this were the all-in-all responsible for the affairs of Ladakh. So basically, the fund that used to come for development to Ladakh, it was at the will of that council, and it was all their decision on how to spend that fund, when to spend it, what all to basically prioritize. So these important decisions were actually being made by the council. Now, I'd like to tell our viewers that these councils, these Hill District Council councils, actually operate as kind of state governments that we have in different states. So the councillor, the chairman who is at the top is like the chief minister, and his four executive councillors are like his cabinet. So the chief is elected by the majority party, whichever party is in majority, and then he creates his own council of ministers like it happens in any other election. So these are the people who used to take all the decisions as far as the land is concerned, which land is to be allotted to which party, which individuals. In fact, they also have allotted a lot of land to the army. So all these decisions were taken by them without anyone questioning them. What has now irritated them is that there's another layer of bureaucracy that has been added in Ladakh after it became a UT. The power center, which was earlier far away from here in J&K, has now shifted to Ladakh. So officers like the chief secretary, the lieutenant governor, the secretary home, etc., have now come and they are sitting here in a secretariat in Ladakh. So earlier, the officers, including, say, the district magistrate or the DC, etc., used to report to these councillors, this councillor who's the chief. But now since there's another layer added to this, they are now reporting in law and order matters, etc. They are now reporting to the lieutenant governor and his team. So this is what has irked them, that, you know, there is another layer of bureaucracy that has come and sat on our heads, which has also eroded our power significantly. One example I will give about this erosion of power that these people keep talking about here is that, like what I spoke about, the one major power was allotment of land that these councils had. Now, what they are saying is that even though in the last 5 years, whatever land allotments that we have done, so they basically, the procedure for it was that the council would decide that this is the land that has to be allotted to an X party. And then the DC will have to take out an order for the same, saying that this has been allotted to this person or this party or this company, whatever. Now, what is happening is that a lot of these requests, these order, these things have gone to the DC for taking out orders. But apparently, the allegation is that the LG is sitting on these files and not clearing these. So basically, the allotment has been done from the side of these district councils, these hill councils, but there's no sanction that has been given from the LG side. So then that's what they're saying, that this power which we had earlier, wherein, you know, the work used to like happen much quicker because there was nobody above them who was giving sanctions or who were clearing their decisions, has been lost. And this is like a complete erosion of power. And this power to allot land only now remains on paper. So this is what is disturbing them.
Yeah, but you've spoken with the government also. What is the government saying there? What is the administration saying in Leh?
So, sir, the administration, essentially, when you talk to them about the sixth schedule as to why is it that the government is reluctant to give sixth schedule, so their argument being that there are no extra powers that these hill councils will get in case they bring in sixth schedule. One of the key arguments that they make is that the fund that is being given to these hill these hill councils right now is from the government of India. Now, if the sixth schedule is granted and they become autonomous bodies, like autonomous councils, like in other areas, they will have to generate their own revenue. And once they start, once they have to generate their own revenue, they will not be able to sustain themselves. So it is not that sixth schedule, by granting sixth schedule, it's going to be all hunky-dory. Another point that they make is that the sixth schedule in, say, Assam or in Meghalaya or in Tripura is actually being used as a shield for corrupt, for people who are corrupt. So they are pointing out for and giving examples like in Assam, there's a lot of rat mining that happens in these sixth scheduled areas. So all these people who are basically running these councils are corrupt, and it's actually not serving the purpose of sixth schedule, because everything is actually happening. The ecology is being disturbed, the tribals are being troubled, there's extortion, etc., etc. So it's not that sixth schedule has given them what it promises. Also, saying that sixth schedule is being used as a shield so that an outside force like a government or any law enforcement cannot stop this. So that's why they are saying that, you know, sixth schedule is not something that is required or is going to benefit Ladakh all in all. Another very important point is that instead of sixth schedule, they are saying that we will grant you 371. Now, Article 371 also says that gives that, you know, it's a special status for any state. And we have seen it in Nagaland, where, you know, the parliament cannot enact laws that affect social, religious autonomy or the practices. We have seen it in Maharashtra, in areas of Gujarat. So the government proposed that we will give you Article 371, and we will also give you an advisory body, council, which will be above these councils, and we will empower them. And by 371, we'll give you all these things that you require. But that demand has been rejected by the people here, saying that, you know, this is just a lollipop. And what is 371 without a state then? If we don't have state assembly, or if we don't have a proper statehood, then 371 doesn't mean anything, because that is for particular states, protection for particular states.
And is the government willing to give an assembly, a UT with an assembly?
No, sir. So last meeting that happened in March, the two bodies that are basically in talks with the Home Ministry, the Kargil Democratic Alliance and the Lay Apex Body. So these two representatives from these two bodies had gone to meet the Home Secretary and other key officials of the Home Ministry. And in fact, they hit a deadlock in that meeting. Then the Home Minister invited them to their residence, and they all spoke in great detail about how and why they need these two things. So apparently Home Minister Amit Shah told them categorically that these are two things that will never be fulfilled, and we cannot give them to you. So please don't, go round and round about this demand of statehood or Schedule 6, because we are very clear that we are not going to give it to
Not statehood. Is the government willing to give them an assembly, elected assembly within a union territory?
No, sir. They have from what I spoke to these representatives about, they are saying that either statehood or UT with the legislative assembly, they are not ready to fulfill these demands of these people. In fact, there were other demands that the government openly heard, and one major demand was the Public Service Commission in Ladakh, because earlier since they were with J&K, so they were doing it with J&K, but then Public Service Commission, especially for Ladakh, earlier the government was not willing, because it's a very small state, a very small UT, but they were not willing to do. But then officials here are telling me that demand has been granted, and there will be a Public Service Commission for Ladakh separately. But then there also there was a contention. These people said that there has to be a 90%, 80% reservation in that Public Service Commission also, because otherwise people from other states will come and give exams here and then eat into their share. So the government told them that, you know, it's a Supreme Court ruling. We can't give you so much reservation. We can only give you up to 45%. But then after dialogue, apparently the government has agreed for 80% and has sought time for 3 months to implement it. So that is what, I mean, those talks are still on as far as the PSC is concerned.
I don't know how the government will do this constitutionally, but governments tend to kick the can down the road, because right now Lok Sabha elections have to happen. then we'll see what happens next. So governments act like that. The other thing that I find touching and amusing at the same time, that one, touching because the bureaucracies do not want to give up power. Once they get power, they don't want to give it up. So once they've tasted power in Leh, this new parallel administration has come in. Why would they devolve it again to the hill councils? Because it used to be with the hill councils earlier. So this is the eternal tussle in any governance system, particularly in democracies which are multi-layered. So that is what has happened. A new power center has come, or new power layer has come. So if all that power is retained by the hill councils, as was the case earlier, then what will this new layer do? So that is one thing. But what the reason I'm amused hearing this is to say that sixth schedule then becomes a shield for corrupt people for carrying out illegal activity like rat hole mining. You know, an important point we need to notice that in all the three states mentioned here, that is Tripura, Assam and Meghalaya, we either have the BJP in power. In Tripura and Assam, the BJP is in power, and Meghalaya, it's an ally of NDA that's in power. So, you know, look, who's talking? Because when it's happening in your states, you let it happen. Now it's another state, another union territory has this demand. You say, no, but what's happening in those states is not a bad thing. It's a shield for corruption. It's a shield for illegal activities. If that is the case, then the counter question can be, why are you not then changing it in the states which your own party rules? So that is an argument, and that is, so that's why that is, it's easier for us now to understand what the protesters are talking about. As we talk, we can see an occasional protester walking in the back. Now you met Sonam Wangchuk in the morning. What's his mood? He's known to be a pacifist guy. He's an environmentalist. He's done great stuff. He set up this campus called SecMol, which is an organization called SecMol, which is Students Educational and Cultural Movement of Ladakh, in 1988, when he was 22 years old. It now has a beautiful campus. That campus, I believe, is fully run on solar power, does not consume any fossil fuels, and is quite a showpiece. A lot of people go there to see it. And he's done some other interesting stuff. He's built this ice stupa, this controversy. You will see some pictures on your screen. And that technology lies in storing the water that comes in when there is water in the streams in Ladakh, which is not often. Ladakh has more than 300 fully sunny days in a year. In fact, today is an unusual day. I can see some clouds in the back. But Ladakh is a very, very sunny state. So this water is frozen and kept in kind of ice stupas. And you can see these pictures. And when spring comes, this is the winter water that is saved. When spring comes, this melts and it can be used for irrigation and other purposes. He also got the Magsaysay Award in 2018 and other awards, the Rolex Award for this particular technology. So he's a smart guy, pacifist, environmentalist. What's his mood? Because right now he seems angry, fast and to death. He's making some dire statements like almost as if some disaster will visit Ladakh anytime if the center does not pay attention, which basically means if the center does not accept his demands.
Right. So he said a very interesting thing today when I asked him that, you know, why is it now? It's been 5 years since the abrogation of 370 happened and Ladakh was created a union territory. So although the protests have been on, but it quite like picked up only recently. So he said right now the mood of the country is elections. And the administrators, the governments will only hear our demands today because right now, they are going to people to ask for votes. And that's why is a very relevant time because otherwise, if elections are over and the government is formed, nobody is going to care about the people who live on the other side of the mountain. So we anyway are not very significant to them as far electorally. So if we say don't raise our voice right now and carry on this protest in full fervor, then nobody will hear us after the elections get over. And in fact, he also said that that this entire support that the BJP had in Ladakh is slightly, you know, is not there anymore, because the people now feel that that they have been taken for a ride, and you know, they have been backstabbed by the government of India. And after these talks with the Home Ministry failing and hitting a deadlock, and them not even listening to their demands anymore, he says that, you know, people of Ladakh, people of, in fact, Leh as well as Kargil, these two areas, he said that there's a history of them also not getting along very well. But in these demands, both of these areas, both of these divisions have also come together against the idea of the government of not granting them what they want. And in fact, what he's saying does hold some water, because when you talk to the general public and when you talk to the locals here in Leh, that is the sense that, you know, in fact, I would like to tell our viewers that the BJP MP also, who was here, who was very, very popular here, his popularity is also slightly going down, precisely because people think that the government of India is not paying any attention to their demands, despite him, you know, holding this protest for 3 weeks, which, you know, he did a fast until death and in such harsh conditions. And it also, you know, attracted a lot of crowd. Like you mentioned initially in your introduction, that the population of Ladakh is not a lot. It is 2.7 lakh, the entire state, the entire UT. Still around 40,000 people, 25 to 40,000 people were at one time here with Sonam Wangchuk protesting. So, I mean, this park used to be like full where I'm sitting. So, I mean, and there are videos that, you know, we have all seen about the protest. So, if so many people he was able to mobilize.
In fact, we will try and show some pictures as we as we talk along. Yes, carry on.
So if he's able to say saying that if you know, these demands and this this concern has been able to mobilize so many people this way, then of course you know, it should affect the formation of the government in this upcoming election, and almost hinting that you know, that they don't stand a chance in Ladakh anymore.
So, in fact, I have with me a paper by Rekha Chaudhary of University of Jammu, and it's titled "Ladakhi Politics Since the Formation of Union Territory." It's a May 2023 paper, and she says, in fact, it's a paper of which I'll share a link with you. But she says that while earlier the politics of Ladakh was divided on sectarian lines, that is Buddhists and Shia Muslims, this change, Ladakh becoming a union territory, although that was always the demand of the Ladakhi politician, that has actually brought the two communities together, because they see many of the issues that currently bother them as common issues. So that has changed the nature of identity politics in Ladakh. So instead of being Buddhist and Muslim, and very often Buddhist versus Muslim, this is becoming now Ladakhi plus Ladakhi, whether Muslim or Buddhist. Am I right to say that, Ananya?
Yes, absolutely. And I'll just give an example which I found was very interesting while speaking to one of the officials here. There is a temple, Buddhist temple in Kargil, that was disputed for ages, like decades. And because it was a very small place and they wanted to renovate it. So since Kargil has a more Muslim majority, there was no consensus that was building to allocate or allot land for that temple. And since the council there is the Kargil Council, which obviously has many Muslim members. So that was the point of contention between these two councils as well, one in Leh and one in Kargil. So in fact, very recently, both these councils had a consensus after many years, and Apart from restoration of that Buddhist temple in Kargil, the council there allotted a separate land to build another Buddhist temple in that area in Kargil, and allotted that land because land power is with them. But now the point is that after that land allotment, it has not been given a clearance from the LG. That has also irritated these people a lot, that we tried to resolve a long dispute that had been there by coming together, and these people are not giving it sanction. So you know, what powers, what do these land allotment powers really mean if we want to do it and they are not allowing us to do that? So who are they to really tell us what we have to do with our land? So this is the kind of sentiment that these people are talking about here on the ground.
So let me try and put it more simply. So there was an old polarization, which was Buddhist,
yes,
Muslim basis. Now the communities, the two communities, got together with the new solidarity and tried to depolarize the situation. So if the dispute was about one shrine, you can have that shrine. And in fact, you can build another shrine next to it as well. It's not as if this land is in lieu of the shrine that you had. And even that, now the UT administration is sitting on. And right. what do you think is the reason they are doing it?
So when we asked about these applications, so that, you know, the government officers said that we are working on it. Of course, they denied all these allegations. So they said that we have to look into all the nitty-gritties, how much money it will take, what is this land. So the teams are working on it. So they really didn't give a clear answer as to what is leading to this delay. But another point here I want to make is that recruitment, these jobs are also, I mean, are an issue here in Ladakh, because there are about more than 3,000 non-gazetted posts that administration is saying that we have filled. But since the rules, etc., have not been made in the last 5 years, the rules, etc., have not been made for making recruitments for gazetted positions. So what is happening is that a lot of work is also stuck because there are no people to do that work. So the lot of posts are vacant. So when asked as to why is this delay happening, so they are saying that we are working on the rules and, you know, we are still, you know, negotiating with how it's going to be done, how, what are the people's demands. So that is also one contention these people, why they are angry is that there are so many posts that are lying vacant, and these are all gazetted posts that you are not and coming up with rules, and that's why our people are not getting it. But again, the government is sitting on it, and if you speak to senior officers, they just blame the Babugiri for it, but nobody is actually giving clear answers as to why it has not been done in the last 5 years.
Okay. It's a strange situation where the civil services blame the civil services, but such is the situation right now. Didn't I also hear something about, I'm also reading in this academic papers which have been published, demand for a Ladakh Public Service Commission?
Yes, as I mentioned, there was a demand for Ladakh Public Service Commission. Earlier, the government was reluctant to give it because it's a very small area. So they said that, you know, it can't be that there's a separate commission for just, you know, Ladakh. So, but then when I spoke to officials, the two groups who had been negotiating with the government, they said that they have agreed to that demand of a separate public service commission. But they said that they can only give 45% of reservation in that. However, people here want 80% reservation in that because they fear that for otherwise locals, they'll have to compete with people from across states.
Reservation for locals. Local people.
Reservation for, yes, local people, 80% is what they are seeking. And the government said they can't do it because it's Supreme Court guidelines and only 45% they can do. But that is something that has been rejected by them. And now the talks are on. Apparently, the government has said that they will come up with a solution in the next 3 months and give 80% reservation
because,
in
because
the public
they
service
would be
commission.
Concerned that outsiders will come and take these jobs and they'll settle down.
Yes.
Now, finally, give us some details about the environmental demands, because a lot of Sonam Wangchuk's demands are environmental demands. For example, he's concerned about so many tourists coming in because water is a hot button issue in Ladakh, and an average tourist consumes a lot more water than an average Ladakhi gets. He or she may want to consume more, but the water is just not available. And similarly, there are other issues. So just give us a brief summary of the environmental demands.
Right. So, Mr. Wangchuk is very passionately, I mean, when we spoke about environment, he spoke very passionately about how it is very essential to have a balance between ecology and development. So he kept insisting that he is not against development, but one has to prioritize. You can't be plundering all the resources that a place like Ladakh has and not care about the locals or the people who are living here. For instance, he gave a very small example of one Ladakhi using only 5 liters of water a day. So he says that when tourists come here, they use about, you know, much more than that. And if there are industries that are set up, he has an estimate of 150 liters every day that will be used. So Ladakh doesn't have that kind of resource. So there'll be, there's already a water crisis, which is going to become worse if, you know, there are so many industries coming up. Second, he spoke about this 7.9 gigawatt of solar park that is coming up. So there was one project that he spoke about is a solar park, which is 7.5 gigawatt for which land has been identified by the government of India. And he told me that, you know, that land actually are summer pastures for these Pashmina goats. Now, these Pashmina goats basically go to these lands to graze in summers because they are living, they are there in very high altitude where, you know, they live, and then they come down to this land to graze. And in case that is taken away and that is destroyed, it's completely going to destroy the livestock. And this is the concern that the nomadic people there, who basically the livelihood of those people, of those nomads, depend on that livestock, will be completely destroyed. So that is one thing that he has spoken about. Second, he's talking about the industrial policy, where he talks about several hydropower projects that are coming up in Ladakh and how it is mismanagement and, you know, just filling pockets of certain industrialists that is going to happen. And it's going to, you know, completely disrupt the ecology in Ladakh. Another very relevant point that he raised was about the tourism policy. Which he says that he's not against tourists coming to Ladakh. Like, for example, if the population is 2.7 lakhs, the tourists, actually, the number of tourists that came last 2 years crossed over four and a half lakhs in Ladakh. So he's saying that is not the problem, that tourists come. They should come, of course, because it also helps the local people earn a livelihood. But there has to be a proper plan for this. It can't be that the tourist can be just concentrated in certain areas like, say, Pangong or Leh, because then it actually puts a lot of pressure on the resources of that small particular region who's anyway struggling with limited resources. So he's saying that why just Leh or why just Pangong? It is the entire state of Ladakh that should benefit from tourists. And there has to be a proper policy and management that the government should work on to ensure that even smaller villages that are far off in Ladakh benefit from tourism, and in how fact, it can be basically, how it can generate revenue in that way.
In fact, he's also been running a homestay project with farmers. I do understand, I suppose, when you have so many tourists coming in, at least water management, water recycling, those are things that need to be paid attention to. Now, 7.9 gigawatt, just to understand, a gigawatt is 1,000 megawatts. So that's 7,900 megawatts. That's a huge power producing facility. Not even a fraction of that power will be consumed by Ladakh or is needed by Ladakh. So that power will then be transported to elsewhere in the country where the consumers are, and for that again a 20,000 crore project is on to build a transmission line from Ladakh into the plains of North India so that this power could go into the national grid, and that is also something that Sonam Wangchuk and his people are protesting about because they say that will disrupt the local ecology. And the next thing he's talking about is this protest on the geothermal plant. Just tell us that and we'll let you go because you've just taken too much of the sun directly.
Yes, so there is this project, the geothermal project, and it's in one area called Puga. So basically that area, if I could just explain in a few lines, like that there are two tectonic plates. And they have collided, and beneath is there's a hotspot for geothermal phenomenon. So there are hot springs. So essentially, ONGC thought that it could tap into that as a source of renewable energy. So that is one project that is ongoing, and you know, land has been identified, etc. And it's a 100-megawatt project. So now that as well is something that the locals have been protesting about and saying that, you know, it's going to completely disrupt the hot springs and it's going to and the nearby areas if that this kind of project, which is like 100 megawatt, comes up in this area.
Yeah. Finally, your view on Sonam Wangchuk, because right now he's the one in news, in firing line, because a lot of people are criticizing him, particularly on social media. His motives are being questioned. He's not been a politician. Give us your assessment of him.
Sonam Wangchuk, as you correctly mentioned, is a very passionate person who has been working a lot in Ladakh. Like those ice stupas was one of the things, very innovative. He also created these camps, the solar heating camps in Ladakh that are being widely used. In fact, he also made one camp for the army and you know, gave it to them, which runs on solar power. So he has been doing these innovative things that are actually very popular among the Ladakhis, especially the youngsters. So which is why we're not surprised that he has such a following and he could actually attract so many thousands of people in Ladakh. What gives him also this, why he stands out is also that he's not a political person. So although the administration, if you speak to them, they might allege that he has political ambitions and, you know, he might be doing this all for attention. But the people of Ladakh are actually, you know, saying that he is a leader in the true sense. And he's not somebody who's doing it for himself. He's doing this for our land, for our people, for our next generation that is to come, because that's what he speaks about. He said, right now we will have development, but what about the next generation that comes in? We'll spoil everything for them. We will see development, but they will just see ruins. So that's what he keeps stressing on. And that has really struck a chord with the locals here. And although, again, like you said, that his you know, his actions are being questioned, because he also questioned the militarization of Ladakh. Now, people might say that, you know, it is a place that shares its border. Strategically, it's a very important place because it shares its border with China and Pakistan. So how is it that you can do a Pashmina march to areas that you accuse that the Chinese have actually taken from the nomads? So you can't do that because it is. But his point is very simple, that, you know, that we will give you support. And we have always been giving support to the government of India. People from Ladakh have been involved in wars. So he speaks about it very fondly, that, you know, we have fought, people here have fought wars. We have always been with the government. We are not somebody who are against it, but give us what is ours. Don't take that away from us. So the intentions seem pretty, you know, noble.
His idea of taking these graziers, Pashmina graziers, was also to say that these are the grazing grounds of these people's goats, which have been, where they've been denied entry by the Chinese now. Isn't that what he was saying?
Yes. And he also said that, you know, this is also to tell the government and tell the people that stop saying and making a fool of people that there is no incursion by the Chinese that has happened from the Chinese side. Because if the victims keep saying that nothing has been lost from our side, the other side is going to be very happy knowing that you don't even care that you have lost so much land. So this is what his argument is, that, you know, that we wanted to make people aware that this is the place that these grazers used to take their goats and had, actually they had been living in those areas who have been pushed back because of incursion by the Chinese. But of course, that march had to be called off because permission was not given for the same.
So that's wonderful, Ananya. Thanks for helping us understand what's going on and from the ground. Now, we do also understand where these frustrations among small populations in the most distant parts of the country come in. Because for them, the issues they face are the most important issues in their lives. And they then think that for the rest of us, much more numerous, we think that what's on top of our mind is the most important thing in the world. And that makes them feel alienated, unwanted and distant. And one of the complaints that they have is that even the national media ignores them. So this is a modest effort, a humble effort on part of the print to reach out. And that's why special thanks also, special compliments to Ananya and to Manisha for going there. I know you are now headed for Kargil, so maybe we'll also be watching your coverage and reading your coverage from both Leh and the Kargil side. Stay well and stay safe.